Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind. Mind Training, Santa Fe Retreat, Part 12.
Today we're going to look at the condensed form in five forces, and then the proficiency. And as we're doing, looking at this from the point of view of the world of complete experience. Is this open behind the light too bright? It's open. It is. Kathleen? Would you be better sitting over there? Or? Pardon? It just felt very bright, and I know what it's like looking into a bright light. Pardon? Okay. Okay. Now, if you'll recall, what to do while living, we have these five forces: impetus, repudiation, virtue, familiarization, and aspiration. Let's take a closer look at each of them. Now, when we were going through this before, I said that impetus is basically intention. And here the intention is to cultivate awakening mind. But in the more general context, you can look at these five forces. This first one being intention. And being very clear about your intention, not only in your practice, but in every aspect of your life, is very important. You cannot be present if you do not know your intention. What are you there for? A very useful method of uncovering the emotion that is driving a reactive pattern is to ask yourself, why am I doing this? And you ask that, well, you know, why am I working at this job? Well, to earn money. Well, why am I earning money? And you just keep asking why. And as you, with each why, you cut deeper. And at some point, you'll reach a point where you'll say, I don't know. And right at that point, at that moment, there is going to be a feeling. You may not be able to name it. You may or may not. But that feeling is what is driving that particular reactive path. So if you aren't clear about your intention, in any specific situation. You are susceptible, or probably are already in, a reactive pattern. So this, okay. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Motivation, intention. In this context, yeah. Second force, well, to go back, we're working with the world of complete experience, you know, the totality of what you experience. When you experience no separation from what is arising, and so any sense of a self separate from this has dropped away, then your intention becomes the direction of the present. Really slowly. When you experience no separation, that is the sense of self drops away. Intention becomes the direction of the present. It's what needs to happen in that moment, as far as the whole situation is concerned. A lot of people would say that's intuition. But it isn't actually intuition, it's the knowing that arises in presence. Pardon? Categories of knowing or things like that, I'm not sure what intuition would match in terms of Tibetan or Buddhist thought. So from this perspective, that feeling, I just knew what to do, in many cases is I would interpret as that knowing quality. And it's not some wispy, wishy-washy thing. It's actually a very precise knowing. Okay? That would be difficult, wouldn't it? Well, when you don't experience separation, you move with what is arising. And so intention may change moment to moment. I mean, one example that I rather like, there is a Dutch person who went to Japan in the late 50s, early 60s, somewhere around there, and to study Zen. And he just had a hell of a time in the Zen monastery. He couldn't adapt to the food. He couldn't adapt to the schedule. He was always screwing up. He couldn't understand how things were meant to be done. And at the monastery, they were pretty patient with him. But because he just kept trying. He had a very good attitude to it. And on one occasion, in the middle of Sesshin, his work duty was to serve tea at one of the breaks. And the way this happened is that two people would leave the meditation hall. One person would get the cups and distribute them, and another person would pick up the teapots and go around and pour tea in all the cups. And his job was to pick up the teapots. And he went to get the teapots, came, and saw that the person who was meant to have distributed the cups hadn't done anything. So he just put the two teapots down, went back, got the cups, distributed them, and then poured the tea. Right? No-brainer, right? Well, at the end of the session, all the monks came up and said, "Good job! Good job! Good job!" And he could, what the hell are they talking about? And he had just seen what needed to be done and done it. Kind of an immediate response to the situation. And he couldn't figure out why they were making such a fuss about it, but it was the one time that he had acted without thinking. Okay, did you have a question, Shana? That you listen completely. Yeah. Well, yes, what you seem to be describing is dropping any sense of what you're going to do with the information and just receiving it, and then a response is going to arise naturally out of that. And that's the kind of thing about that I mean about direction of the present. So intention, very important. Then the second force, which is translated as familiarization, this is your practice. This is what you do to implement your intention, also to be able to implement your intention. This is the clearing away of stuff. For instance, if your intention and practice is awakening mind or no separation or compassion, then the force of familiarization is your practice. It's what you do to train that ability or remove the blocks or whatever that prevent that from being present in you. Then the third force, which was the force of virtuous seeds, this is basically about taking care of your internal environment. We noted earlier that when you do something virtuous, you feel clearer and lighter. When you observe ethical behavior, there is less for you to be thinking about. One of the traditional lists of virtuous actions in the Mahayana is the six perfections: generosity, morality, patience, diligence, which you can put / enthusiasm, meditative stability. And what's usually translated as wisdom, as in the perfection of wisdom, but is more really, it's closer to an intelligence, a kind of intelligence. Now, Milarepa once sung a song about these, interpreting the six perfections in terms of not so much external activity, like giving generously to other people, but when, how to say, when you give up any sense of self, what other generosity can there be? When you never experience shame, what other morality can there be? When you don't react to anything, what more patience can there be? When you are never separate from your practice, what more diligence can there be? When your mind is never distracted, what more meditative stability can there be? The last one is, when you don't hold to anything at all, what greater wisdom can there be? So these six perfections are being interpreted in just how you relate to the totality of experience. Learn those from Dajun Rinpoche. Yeah, it's one of Milarepa's songs. Karmasishi Chang translated somewhat differently in the 100,000 songs. But you can find a translation of that on my website. So the force of virtuous seeds is about taking care of your internal environment. So you have the right environment for practice, for being able to discern intention and so forth. Then the fourth force, which you may recall is the force of repudiation, this is about what you do with all of the memories and associations about the past, which naturally emerge as patterns are dismantled. Because as patterns are dismantled, I mean, many of you described this, and it's exactly what happens. You start working on a pattern, think a certain behavior here, and you see, oh. And then you notice the same behavior over here. You go, well, that's interesting. And you keep working on it, and then you notice it over there. Now you're beginning to get a little disturbed. And then, at a certain point, it's everywhere. I like to say patterns have a fractal structure. And it's really true. You can take any area of your life and find all of your patterns in there. Some of them may be very obvious in that area of life, and some of them may be very subtle, but they'll all be there. So all kinds of thoughts and memories and associations about the past come up. And this is where the force of what we call repudiation comes in. This is about letting all of that stuff go because there is nothing to be done about it. In one of the phrases in the Tibetan tradition, the only good thing about unwholesome actions is that you can stop doing them. So, in that context, I'm going to read the story again. Nuru Bey was a reflective and respected Albanian. And pay attention to every word here. Nuru Bey was a reflective and respected Albanian who had married a wife much younger than himself. And to assist you in this, in most of these stories, the feminine is a symbol for original knowing. One evening, when he had returned home earlier than usual, a faithful servant came to him and said, "Your wife, our mistress, is acting suspiciously. She is in her apartment with a huge chest, large enough to hold a man, which belonged to your grandmother. It should contain only a few ancient embroideries. I believe that there may now be much more in it. She will not allow me, your oldest retainer, to look inside." Nuri went to his wife's room and found her sitting disconsolately beside the massive wooden box. "Will you show me what is in the chest?" he asked. "Because of the suspicion of a servant, or because you do not trust me? Would it not be easier just to open it without thinking about the undertones?" asked Nuri. "I do not think it possible." "Is it locked?" "Yes." "Where is the key?" She held it up. "Dismiss the servant, and I will give it to you." The servant was dismissed. The woman handed over the key and herself withdrew, obviously troubled in mind. Nuru Bey thought for a long time. Then he called four gardeners from his estate. Together they carried the chest by night, unopened, to a distant part of the grounds and buried it. The matter was never referred to again. And all it says here is, this tantalizing story, repeatedly stressed as being of interior significance, aside from its evident moral, is part of the repertoire of wandering dervishes. Any thoughts in the context of patterns unfolding? Yes, Guy. Interesting. Janaki.
Well,
might want to say a bit more about that. The story doesn't say that he does. The story says he does nothing with the. It doesn't say what he does with the key, but the box is gone. What does the box, who does the box belong to? Grandmother. And it contains embroideries. Okay. Yeah. I think it's a very important point. Well, that's a wrinkle I hadn't considered, but I may be reading too. There may be something there. I may be reading too much, and I don't know. But I think what's being suggested here is basically how I've come to understand the story too. It's the old servant is part of the whole old way of functioning, and now he has formed this new relationship with knowledge. And it's tenuous. That's what I think is wonderful about the story. It's about the tenuousness of this relationship. And so, I should have bookmarked it, but. Will you show me what is in the chest? Because of the suspicion of a servant, or because you do not trust me? And Nuri's question is very interesting. Would it not be easier just to open it without thinking about the undertones? Yeah, I... Can't we just get this out of the way? It's a little adversarial, but, and she says, I do not think that is possible. In other words, if you know, then everything has to be dealt with. What's really going on here. And that's when he's reconnected with this reflective quality, capability. Like, no, there isn't a shortcut here. You've got to deal with what is arising in you right now. Okay, is it locked? Yes, here's the key. Here's the key. Yeah. She holds it up. It's right there. And it's interesting. I think the key has a twofold meaning. It's the key to knowing more than it is to the box. Yeah. Yes.
So what does it mean that he bears the box? That he is separating himself from...
He's dying... He's dying to the reactive patterns from the past. It's done. He's aligning himself with wisdom. Right. Yeah. That's a very good point. Thank you. So this is what I love about this book, and I highly recommend it. Tales of the Dervishes. It is full of stories like this, which are very rich. And in Los Angeles, we spent 4 weeks. In my book, I included another one, the lamp shop story in the first chapter. And in the Wake Up to Your Life group we have in L.A., we spent 4 weeks going over that one story, all its nuances. It's by Idris Shah, yeah. He collected these. This is an old edition, but this is not too old, actually, because these have fallen out of print, and then Penguin Arcana republished them, so you should be able to get hold of it. Judy? That struck me too, and how does knowing manifest? Compassion. She knows things, and what's her wish for her husband? But she doesn't have any say about it. It's up to him at this point. And so which brings out another point. Any work with pattern material has to be volitional. You cannot be coerced or forced into it. Okay? I do not know. There is a Sufi teacher that I met at a conference some time ago, and he's very, very deeply trained in one of the Sufi orders, and this is one of the things. And he said to contact him. And this is one of the questions that I'm planning to take up: how are these actually used? But as far as I can understand, in reading this and some other stuff that I've read, these are stories that would be given to a student, and they would sit with them. Yes, but they aren't really the same as a koan. They aren't about stopping the mind the way the koan is. They're about bringing out an understanding, which then the student would be responsible for exercising in life. And what's interesting here is that there are several stories which are paired. And the two stories would be given together or be studied consecutively. Shauna, you had a question? Okay. So this fourth force, the force of repudiation, is about letting go of the past, or, as we'll be discussing as much as can in the time we have remaining, dying to the past. Dying to the past. And then the fifth force is the force of aspiration. No, first force was force of impetus or intention. You're in the section... Yes, you're in the section on dying. We're still in the section on living. And actually, it's the second force there. As patterns open, energy is released. What happens to you all the time when a new level of understanding or something arises? Well, yeah. But something, at least it always happens for me anyway. Yeah, and you start looking to the future, don't you? Ah. Right? Yeah. I'm going to get there. Okay? But things like that happen very easily. And to my mind, what's happening here is this is part of the genius of these things. You look to the future, all of these hopes and aspirations come, and what one's doing here is taking all of those, which are basically projections onto the future, and that tendency to project onto the future what you're experiencing now, and using that to reinforce the original intention. That's what the aspirations do. Janaki. Yeah, your attention's somewhere else. Whack. The Greeks used to say. Oh no, that's a little different. We don't use that one. But it's you always get hit from the direction in which you're not looking. It never comes at you this way. Well, that's the point. There is that natural thing to project into the future, and by forming the aspirations, it brings you back into the present, into what is my intention here. It is to wake up for the benefit of beings. And that brings you back, oh, this is where I am. Yes? Say a bit more about that. What do you see? Yes, in that sense, I would say in that sense and also in one other. I mean, one of the primary definition of faith that I work with is faith is the willingness to open to whatever arises in experience. And here there has been an opening or an insight or an understanding that arises. And for some people, that in itself is the threat. That opening, that understanding itself is the threat, or they interpret it as a threat. And so there a certain amount of faith, i.e. willingness to open, is required to step into that new form of knowing. But that's another wrinkle in the story of Nuru Bay here. Yes, I think you could see it that way. Mm-hmm. So those are the five forces in life. Now, remember that it then promptly turns around and goes through the five forces as they apply to dying. And I checked in Chikawa's original commentary, which I have here with me, I checked in that this morning, because I was curious to see if Conkrell had changed the order, but Chikawa goes through in exactly the same order. Now, one of the things that I have learned from studying Tibetan Buddhism and practicing it is the order of these lists is often important. And the six perfections are in a certain order for a certain reason. the four measurables can be ordered in three different ways. And each one of them embodies a certain approach. And I talk about that in the chapter on the four measurables. Actually, I just discovered a fourth ordering, one which starts with compassion. It's the first time I've come across one which starts with compassion, but that's another story. And so in looking this over, the first, when you're talking about dying, the first force is addressing the internal environment, that is, generating virtue. You give the instruction is to give everything away. In other words, to let go of what is defining you now, and all the things that are that you've accumulated. Well, that's basically about preparing to die, which means you're no longer in denial, which many of you will recall is the first stage of death. The dying process is denial. This is one of my students, who's a federal agent, said, and denial ain't a river. So the second force is about aspirations. And what's the one thing that you're concerned about when you're dying? Yeah, the future. What's going to happen? And so you set these aspirations. It's a way of forming a relationship with what's arising right there. And if you remember the five stages of dying, Kubler-Ross, it's anger. And one of the primary sources of anger, it's about anger about not having a future. You're angry that you're dying. This change is coming. So aspirations is a way of addressing that anger. And then the third force is the force of repudiation, which discussed in terms of addressing the past. If you recall, the third stage of dying is bargaining. And a lot of that bargaining is about getting enough time to address stuff that is really bothering you as you're dying, i.e. stuff that hasn't been sorted out in your life. Now, if you give me another 3 months, I'll do this. No? You follow me? So, by acknowledging to oneself, yeah, this is what I did, wasn't good, and really letting oneself feel and experience that completely, that's how you lay it down. That's all you can do with regrets that one has about the past. So this is about coming to terms with one's past, so that you can be at peace. Then the fourth force is the force of intention. This is my aim. This is what I intend to do right here in this situation of me dying. And that, of course, is to be as awake as possible as I die. Now this, the fourth stage of dying is depression or despair. But the one thing that counteracts despair is having a clear intention. Because despair is like, there's nothing to be done. Ah, but there is. I'm doing this. This is what I intend. And then the fifth force is the force of practice or familiarization. It's what you actually do as you die. And here, this is acceptance, okay? This is what is happening, and here's what I do. And you're relating directly to the situation. Now, the whole subject of dying is very, very important in Buddhist practice. Because in order to know, we have to die. To enter into a new kind of knowing or a new way of knowing, you have to die to the world based on the old way. So the practice of Buddhism is a constant process of dying and being reborn, dying and being reborn. Yes. Well, in the instructions, he was talking about actual dying. This is what you do when you are actually dying. But now I'm taking it to refer to the kind of dying that we go through all the time in our practice. So we have this idea that things are this way. And all of you know this from your struggles with meditation. You know, something comes up and you realize, oh, I'm going to have to let go of this and this and this. And it's painful to let go of all of that. Yes. You have more common sense than most people.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.